Hi, this is Mark Talbot. I post his alt in a 20-foot radius.
Hi, this is Derek Myers. I post as Amaron at DungeonsMaster.com. And welcome to our podcast, Recounting Encounters.
A show where we talk about what happened at D&D Encounters this week. Hey everybody, welcome to D&D Encounters, Season 12, Against the Cult of Chaos. This week we talk about Session 4. I guess we could say Week 4 now. And seems to be a lot to talk about. Chatting earlier, why don't you start us off tonight, Craig?
Sounds good to me. All right, so just...
Oh, hang on. Sorry to interrupt, Craig. Yeah. No worries. Hi, Craig. How you doing?
Pretty good. How are you?
Very well. Yourself, Derek?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
So now everybody knows who's joined us. Craig, go ahead.
All righty. So last week, the table that I ran... we finished, we did things a little bit out of order. So we did the Golden Grain path. The first session of Golden Grain, they did not succeed during the combat and ended up getting knocked out. They woke to found themselves on a boat in a cave, ended up confronting the reptile god and found out that there's this whole sort of slave operation going on where they were being processed into cultists and basically discovered that this was all happening in the Temple of the Lawbringer back in Homelane. So upon exiting the caverns, they were able to make their way back to Homelane. But now, of course, knowing that Insert Canada Sea Day, I just want to clarify again, had indicated to them that she believes that not everyone involved has been a brainwashed cultist. So after the reptile god had been defeated, then that would have lifted the curse on those that were brainwashed. However, she was pretty sure that there was some bad apple in there to begin with. I mean, how else were they infiltrated to begin with? It's not like everyone just got, you know, brainwashed out of the blue. So anyhow, they're a little nervous, didn't want to just waltz right back into town like, hey guys, we're back, we saved the day. So they decided to be a little more stealthy just because they didn't know who they can trust, who they can't. They did a nice group stealth check and killed it, so they were able to make their way back to the Druid's Grove. And they did trust Ramdi because Canada CD was vouching, saying, you know, we can trust this guy, let's get the villagers back there, let's rest and recuperate. We have to deal with this this temple problem because basically it's... You know, shit's hitting the fan here. So basically, they got in there. They decided to lick their wounds, have themselves a nice little extended rest. But they did have a little talk with Ramdi, and he was letting them in on just a little bit more information about the, you know, about the history of Homelane. He was founded 200 years ago, 100 years ago. We've had these similar sort of unusual problems as well. You know, recently there's also been these sort of coordinated bandit attacks. That's also happening in time with these goblin attacks from the goblins of the Caves of Chaos. So, you know, one of those things alone maybe not be such a big deal, but because everything's sort of happening all at once, certainly something strange and unusual is going on here. So he wanted time to meditate and maybe get in touch with the primal spirits with this new information, maybe see if he can gain a little more insight. But he did absolutely let the characters rest up in the grove, and they would be under his protection during that time in case anyone came snooping around. So one of the player characters who actually wasn't going to be there that night, and that was actually Derek.
That was me.
Indeed. So he wasn't going to be there. So basically his character had gone out, decided to take upon himself to go snoop around in the town, you know, assuming that, you know, we're not going out as a group. We're not going to attract as much attention. I can easily sneak out there and see what I can find, you know, and see if I can get anything that can aid us any better. We actually had a new player show up that night, so I basically had it that he was sent back, saying at least claiming that a character by Derek's description had sent him back to aid the characters. Yeah, he had heard that they were also looking to answer the call of the Temple of the Lawbringer from Canada CD's original call for adventurers. Whether or not that ends up being true, time will tell, but that's the case there. Now, his character was, Derek's character, I should say, was supposed to meet them back in the evening because they wanted to approach the Temple of the Lawbringer at night to try and find out what the hell's going on. But in the evening, of course, Derek not being there, the surprise, surprise, the PC does not show up either. So they really didn't know what to do because I don't, I, you know, I think they were kind of thinking that I had something up my sleeve that, oh, and turns out Derek is here, and, you know, it walks Derek. Surprise, I'm not really at the hockey game. But so they were a little bit unsure of how to proceed. But ultimately, I think their biggest fear was that they know something. They've certainly confirmed that something bad is happening at that temple. They've just kind of screwed up whatever the plans were. So they don't really feel like they have the freedom to walk around town safely anymore until this is dealt with. So, like, okay, you know what? With or without him, we got to get to this. So they decided to approach the temple. So it's late at night. None of them are ultra athletic enough to really climb up and try and sneak into a window or something like that. So they decided we're going to have to pick the lock of the front door. And we had one of the characters roll, you know, a thievery check to try and unlock it. And it was one of those rolls I was saying before where it wasn't incredibly high, or it wasn't very high, and it wasn't very low. So it was one of those sort of ambiguous rolls. You don't really know how successful it is. The way I described it was that, you know, you're working away at the lock, and one of the characters was aiding him. So, you know, he gave him a +2 and did a little bit of flavor text describing that, you know, they were back and forth bickering, and then finally they felt the familiar click, and they realized, yep, the lock has come undone. So as they were getting ready to come in, suddenly the door gets yanked from their hands as the sister Euphema, one of the sisters tending to the temple, greets them, and immediately one of the players dives for the bushes to hide in a very comical way. She looks at him with her head tilted, like, is there a problem? Is there a crisis here that you're calling so late? So they basically decided they're going to tell her that, you know, they've sort of formed this little militia, or sorry, I guess a coalition of concerned citizens, just wanting to test to make sure that there's no security issues or any foul play in any of these sort of establishments around town. And they're checking in the night because that's when the prowlers may be about, yada, yada, yada. They nailed the diplomacy quite good. So she was more than willing to have them in. She said, oh, you know, come in. I've just set out the figs at the side here. So, you know, you're free to have one each, but please, you know, go easy on the figs. We don't have a whole lot left. And, you know, it is for everyone. So, you know, please help yourself and have a look around. And one of the players suggested, you know, we don't want to be in your way, so why don't you just go back to doing what you're doing, and you know, we'll let you know when we're done. She's like, well, I was just resting in my quarters. So they escorted her down to her room, and she said, okay, well, just, you know, whatever you do, don't go into the basement. We do have some visiting monks, and we are under strict orders. They are in the middle of some intense prayer, and they can't be disturbed, so don't go down there. However, I believe a few of you were acquainted with Sir Moonbrook, and he's upstairs. He's being treated by Sister Divya, so feel free to visit him, but please,
Craig, let me stop you.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Let me get this right. You told them not to eat the figs and not to go downstairs, but you suggested they go upstairs. I'm absolutely guessing they ate the figs and went downstairs.
Well, what they actually, it's funny because I figured that's exactly what was going to happen. Certainly they ate the figs. Immediately, one of the players is like, I'm going to double hand it and just start shoveling those figs into my face. Well, a couple others are like, oh, you have to do some checks, make sure they're not poisoned. But no, the first thing that they were interested in doing was looking for the collection plates, actually. They wanted to make sure that there was no spare change lying around that they couldn't. Basically, they're taking anything of any value that wasn't nailed down.
Nice. It
wasn't much. I mean, they found some religious pamphlets that told them that, you know, that spoke of the glory of the Lawbringer and that type of thing. But in terms of any kind of treasure that they're hoping to find, they weren't so lucky on that front. However, they discussed, they had pretty much decided they're going to go downstairs, but the mention of Sir Moonbrook was incentive enough, I think, that kind of caused a little bit of rift. So they're like, okay, well, clearly we're not supposed to go downstairs. Clearly there's something interesting going on down there. We know that something screwy is happening in this church, but Sir Moonbrook's upstairs. You know, what's been going on with him? We haven't seen him for, you know, a little bit, to see what's happening. They decided to go upstairs, and of course, they find him quite mutilated and deceased. In his hand, or sorry, on the ground, they find a note that he had begun to compose. However, it doesn't really impact them so much this time, but they don't really know that at this point. The clue that he sort of holds on is actually something that's supposed to be a way to get to the reptile god, but they've actually already done that. So anyway, they made their way back downstairs after seeing this, and they said, all right, we got to go to the basement. Something is really screwed up here. You know, he's completely toasted. So I had Sister Euphemia. She came back out saying, oh, you know, I just wanted to to double check and make sure that you know, you guys aren't going to the cellar, and she catches them at the cellar. So, of course, right? But so basically, they tried to do another sort of smooth talk and get her to go away, but this time they did not roll so lucky. So she starts to get a little suspicious. Like, you know, maybe it's time you guys go. You've been here long enough. I feel confident enough. We don't have any more, you know, problems. We're not going to have any break-ins or anything like that. You know, you're just kind of disturbing the peace now. I mean, certainly if there's a crisis, we can help. But if not, and it doesn't seem like there is, then, you know, we do open at, you know, 8 o'clock tomorrow morning or whatever. So basically one of the characters sort of in desperation used one of his powers to create an illusion of Sir Moonbrook. So he made an illusion of a sickly looking Sir Moonbrook, I should say, walking across the hall and then heading towards the stairs. Their thought process, because they all kind of got their weapons ready, because they thought, aha, now we're going to get her in the lie. She knows that Sir Moonbrook's dead and da da da. Now, what they don't realize is that she's actually not behind any of this. So she honestly believes that everything is A-okay, there's no problems. But upon seeing Sir Moonbrook, she's like, oh, why, look, your friend's up. Wow. You know, let's go check on him. This is the first time we've seen him up. So, of course, the character's a little bit surprised, and they let her go upstairs to see him. So the shock upon seeing what really befell him is enough to, you know, make her pass right out. She was sort of a sweet, innocent old lady. Or at least that's the way that I played her. So she was had a horrifying shock, and they just heard the thump of the body hitting the ground, which was indication that, all right, let's go to the basement now.
So the party basically said, aha, now we could take the collection plates.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, really. Or they should have raided her bedroom now that she was unconscious. that's more in keeping with that group.
I'm just
yeah, no, seriously. You know, actually, you know, I'm surprised that actually did not happen. But I think their interest was so peaked with the basement at this point that they made their way down. Now, the interesting thing here is that the combat for, like, the last combat, if the characters are to be successful in the previous combats or the previous scenarios, if it's played straight through as it's published, basically you see an NPC that shows up in the basement that teleports away really quick, and then later on when you get to the reptile god encounter, you see him again hiding out in this sort of collection of slaves, and then you kind of realize, oh look, he's infiltrating these guys and he's tricking us. So then there's a big combat encounter, you can kill him and all that stuff. So in this case, he was played out of order because they got captured the first time. So basically I had them come down, he has his cloak up, so I describe him the same way that I described him the first time that they saw him, but you know, no one really realized this is the same NPC, because he did escape in that last encounter they had. I made sure to have him at least attempt to escape the last time so I could bring him back for this encounter. But he was successful that time, so they didn't recognize him at first, but they did notice that the statue of the Lawbringer is supposed to be holding swords, but it's holding mummified snakes. A couple of the priests seem to be kneeling and praying in front of these shrines, and then there's this sort of frog-like human. Just as the PCs arrive at the bottom of the stairs, Sister Divya comes down, you know, with oh, thank goodness you're here. You know, we've been accosted by this fiend and his minions. Thankfully you're here to put an end to this. And immediately the players are not buying it. So immediately, like, oh, I'm doing an insight check. She's totally bullshitting. And it comes to that. They roll pretty high. And so basically, I just described that. You know, you get a good look at the guy who had his cloak hanging low as he looks up to answer to Sister Divya's accusation. But you get that glimmer of realization that this is the guy that you just saw in the cave just a little bit ago. And he's looking at her sort of with a knowing gaze, kind of waiting for her to give him the cue to respond. So I mean, like, oh, you liar. And her reaction, you know, once she's called out, she has no qualms about it. She's like, that's right, ha ha, I've tricked you, you fools. But now, normally she tells him to go escape and go warn the reptile god about this. In this case, the reptile god's dead. So instead, what I've done is I've said, you know, you go get to Lareth the Beautiful. Let him know that we've been compromised, that he needs to make his move now, that the town is ripe for the plucking. So that initiated the combat. I had him. Now, normally, Gareth, which is the cultist's name, disappears right away. I had him stick around for a couple of rounds so the players could sort of get a chance to whack at him. But we had a couple Bullywugs come up and just completely corner them at the entry area of the room where they come down the stairs. They didn't really get out there, so I had the Bullywugs just really corner them in, and the whites came up and just were sucking away their what's called healing surges. Yeah. So they were pressed up against it being taken out. It was a pretty bad fight initially because they were focusing so much on getting Gareth, and then on his turn he eventually got to the shrine and was able to get away. So. They weren't able to get to him. Sorry, what?
Yeah, I was gonna say it's funny how the mentality of a single target, the importance of a single target, can really just color your judgment during combat. It's an age old trick. I know as a DM, I do that all the time. You give them a reason to hate one guy, and then you put them in the worst strategic position on the map for the players, and the players will inevitably go there. Just to try and stick it to him.
Exactly. And that's totally what happened here. I mean, as soon as he went away, this probably elicited the biggest reaction as soon as he vanished from their sight. They're like, no! But, what can you do?
So my question, I just want to go back a little bit. You talked about when they picked open the door. I mean, I know this is a while back. But why were they so afraid of that one elderly lady?
Well, because they don't know who... Like I think they just kind of took the assumption that anyone in the temple is not to be trusted.
Oh, okay, so they thought that there was a whole bunch of people just waiting for them on the other side of the door.
Yeah, pretty much, or at the very least, that this kind old lady is just sort of a front, and really she's going to turn around. She's going to be this wicked old hag that slings these horrifying spells at them once they step in.
Got it.
Right. So that was kind of their take on it. I mean, obviously, throughout their encounter with her. They started to realize that she was not who they initially thought, but once they got to the basement, that's where they saw where the bad seeds were.
Cool.
But I mean, like I said, they were pinned down for a bit, but a couple of them got creative and were able to manage to, make it over the barrier that I had kind of set up with the Bullywugs, got themselves in some pretty good combat situations tactically. And I mean, the enemies, especially now that they're level two, they weren't overly difficult. They didn't have a huge amount of hit points. The defenses weren't terribly high, so it was just a matter of time and they were able. I mean, it was a struggle at first, but once they were able to get in sort of better positioning on this map, they were able to take them out pretty quick. And in at the very end too, with what's her name, Sister Devi, she tried to surrender. She said, "Oh, I'll take you to Lareth the Beautiful. I'll take you to where this whole operation's happening. And you know, I was under the spell of the reptile god too, and it just broke now." This one player that we have is very notorious for his merciless ways, and he had also just acquired the death circlet from the reptile god. So he was really, he hadn't dropped anyone himself, and he was really itching to get a soul captured into that one of those seven gems on there. So he had none of it. He just, nope, see ya, done. Took her soul, and that was that. So basically, they did a little bit of exploring, and then they eventually found that there was a door. That this is the tunnel that attaches it to the Golden Grain Inn, and as well the Winsome Wench. But suddenly, because this particular character, the guy who killed Sister Devi, he's also partially possessed. From the very beginning of the encounter, he took some of the essence of Miska. So I gave him a vision suddenly of a broken down keep with a moat surrounding it. Then suddenly he had a vision of this sweeping mountain range and a set of caves and goblins tearing apart a human body on the side. And he wakes up thinking, oh my gosh, I just saw these crazy images, but I'm not going to share it with the party. However, the way it was described was that his eyes kind of glazed over into this black, misty-like state, which was similar to what Sir Moonbrook had. He tried to bluff the party, but they brought up the very good point of, well, we just kind of saw your eyes turn into this swirly black mist, kind of like with Sir Moonbrook, so I don't know if I'm going to believe his lie, no matter how high he rolled. So, you're right about that, so that's where we left it. And we'll see what happens next week.
Okay, so I got to figure out how I'm going to play my character when I rejoin the party based on what happened while I was gone.
Yeah, we're going to have to come up with a way for you to come back. I think we might even do a little scenario before we get into it, just you were actually up to. I mean, at this point, it doesn't really matter where they go because I'll be prepared for anything. And it's just really a matter of what piques their interest more, because I think they're kind of interested in the caves, but... They're definitely interested in going after Gareth, who is going to Lareth the Beautiful, but they don't actually have the sort of connect the dots yet to...
No, not yet.
When in doubt, teleport.
Yeah, exactly.
Indeed. Yeah, well. Okay, so now, Craig, I know you played another encounter as well, but it was very similar to mine, so why don't I jump in and then you can sort of highlight the differences. So my group did the Moat House. In week two, they did the Moat House, the upper level. And then last week, they did the Caves of Chaos. And then this week, we had to figure out sort of where to go next. And so I gave them a wide berth. Like, I didn't really push them in one direction too much or another. And when they all got back to the town, they had rescued Otis, they had defeated the creatures in the Caves of Chaos, and they had acquired the magic sword. So, you know, they were really not sure where to go next. They did ask Otis more questions about the history of Homelane and about what was going on in the Caves of Chaos, because they last week they didn't really ask the ghost of Homel, what's his name again? Homel...
First name. Yeah, I can't remember either.
I know it's an H, but anyway, the ghost of Homel. And so basically I had Otis explain that, yeah, his party knew who the ghost was, so they asked him all these questions. So basically then Otis was able to regurgitate all that information to the party, so that helped. They were really interested that finding out that there were two more items that would help them defeat this ultimate evil. And so that certainly piqued their interest. So then when they got back to the town, they split up, divide and conquer. They went and talked to the constable. They went to the Druid cottage to return Otis to his family. They went to the Druid grove. They went to the trading post. They went to the Temple of Lawbringer. Like, they all sort of went to wherever their particular desires sent them. excuse me. One of the players who was at the trading post, after they had gone to talk to the constable was like, well, last week you told me that there's two women working at the trading post that are in league with the bandits. So while you were gone, I went and questioned them, but there was no concrete proof of anything. So, you know, he goes, I'm just going to keep my eye on them. So this player decided he was going to stir the pot a bit, try and find some proof. And so when he got there, he's playing a tiefling and all the rest of the party are playing elves. And he's like, look, you may think I'm a part of that group, but like, look at me. Do I look like I'm a part of that group? I just met them on the ride here. He's like, I was on my way here to do, you know, a bigger job for a guy who goes by the name The Beautiful. And he's like, I was trying to find him, but, you know, the crap hit the fan and I was put in a position where I had to, you know, do what the party wanted me to do. But he's like, I'm still here to accomplish my bigger mission and I've been told that you can help me do that. And so the halfling at the trading post was like not willing to cough up any information. So she basically gave him this sob story about how, you know, in order to earn her trust and gain the password to get down to the lower level of the Moat House, the player had to go and free one of the bandits that was in prison. And so the party had an interesting discussion on how best to handle this. They originally decided they were going to just literally try and break the guy to prison. And then... after that, they realized, no, they've gained too much goodwill with the constable that they don't want to risk that. So they're like, okay, we're going to bring the constable on board. We're going to explain what's going on. And then so they finally managed to get the constable to agree. And they made it look like it was a jailbreak, but the constable was in on it the whole time. And then the one, again, I don't know why they didn't go as a whole party, but the tiefling guy who had made the arrangement, he escorted the escaped prisoner back to the trading post in exchange for the password. And then there was a interesting encounter. He basically brought the guy into the trading post and he's like, yeah, I'm here to see so-and-so the halfling. And the other proprietor of the shop's like, yeah, she's not here right now. She's out at the barn doing inventory. And the guy who was released from prison, he basically just sidled up along with the other, you know, hired goons. And the player's like, yeah, okay, come on, we're going to go and find the halfling. He's like, no, I'm good here, thanks. And basically all the people in the trading post like pulled weapons and they're like, yeah, dude, we're at number 4-1. You better just leave. So he was pretty ticked off that he helped the guy escape from prison. And then the guy just sort of turned on him. But the halfling ended up being true to her word. She provided the password. And then so I said to the party, I'm like, okay, you know, some of them seem to be pretty interested in going back to the Golden Grain Inn and participating in some of the bar games. But so I said, I'm like, you guys can do the bar games or you can do the lower level of the Moat House. And so they voted on it. It was a tie. And then so they you know, the players had to convince the other players to go one way or the other. They ended up staying at the Golden Green Inn and doing the bar games, which they did quite well in. And then I basically, when they had gone to all their individual locations in the town, I had sort of given each of them a little plot hook, and most of those hook brought them back to the Golden Green Inn. And so when they got there, they all sort of had different NPCs they were trying to make contact with, and some were cooperative, but most were not. And eventually they noticed some of the NPCs were going down in the basement and not returning. And so they eventually decided to go and see what was going on. And Craig, sort of similar to the way you described the church, it's like they went downstairs and they looked around and they're trying to find stuff. And then the one guy specifically says, he goes, "I look for secret passages." I'm like, okay. I go, there's like a curtain along one wall. And I go, you pull it aside and it's clear there's a door or a passage of some sort on the other side. And he's like, great. And then at that moment I had the guy who runs the bar. I can't think of his name. I want to say, is it Bertram?
Yeah, it's Bertram.
Yeah, Bertram. I had Bertram show up and he goes, "What the hell are you guys doing down here?" And they're all like, uh-oh. Because at this point, they don't know Bertram's a bad guy. And he's like, "I've been nothing but cordial. I've been giving you free drinks. I've been giving you free meals. I gave you free rooms." He goes, "And I find you guys down in my cellar stealing my stuff?" And they're like, whoa, we're not stealing anything. And he's like, "What the hell?" He goes, "I'm going to have to bring the constable in." And they're like, no. "The constable's our friend. We don't want to screw this up. We're going to make this right." And meanwhile, one of the guys is like, "Can I just open the secret passageway?" And I'm like, "If you want to." And he's like, "What's behind this passage?" He goes, "I keep that there." He goes, "I keep that like that locked up because some of the guys that work for me are kind of dishonest, and I keep my fine vintages of wine in there." And they're like, "Oh yeah, okay." So the guy opens the passage, and sure enough, the two bullywugs are there. And then the bullywugs, of course, jump in, attack the party, and then the party's like, "Oh my god, bullywugs!" They start fighting them, and then Craig, much like you did when you ran it, I had Bertram sort of call for his reinforcements, like, you know, whistles. He's like, "Here, boys, come on!" And then all the goons start running downstairs. Yeah. So they were fighting on both sides. But they had two controllers in the party, so it was no problem at all. The first guy, he was the guy who opened the secret passageway. He did burning hands in the hallway on the two bugbears or bullywugs, bloodied them both, did almost the maximum damage, bloodied them both, and then the other wizard did beguiling strands and killed like half the minions with the first attack. And then the next round, she did it again and killed the rest of the minions.
Oh, beguiling strands. So awesome.
Oh, it's so good. I mean, it's 5x5. It attacks the will. It was even with the improved defenses from the gang. It did.
Yeah,
it
make only a enemies. Oh, it's great.
Yeah, no, it was good. So, however, my, the guy, Derek, who comes in with the crossbow, man, he hit every single time. Unfortunately, in like the second round, the party leader, he used, it must have been a daily power. It gave all the PCs within 5 squares 14 temporary hit points. This was before any of them, one guy had taken a hit. Nobody else had taken damage. I couldn't even do 14 points on them. Like at the end of the fight, only one guy had damage, like real damage, and needed to use a surge. Everybody else, the only damage they took had just eaten away some of the temporary hit points. And so they took out all the bad guys. They said they killed the bullywugs. They knocked unconscious all the other guys except the guy Derek, the pixie, who's one of the wizards. It wasn't the pixie, it was the slayer who had lost at the arm wrestling competition. She's like, I'm like, "Are you going to kill this guy?" And she's like, "Yeah, he was one of the guys who laughed when I lost the arm wrestle, so I kill him." I was like, "Really?" And she's like, "Oh yeah, I'm so ticked off that he was giving me grief. They were calling me chicken." And she's like, "Yeah, I just stab him through the heart with this sword. I kill him outright."
That's enough to end someone's life.
Okay. At the end of the encounter, I just said to them, I'm like, okay, they found the ledger with the names in it. And then they were like, "Well, where does the secret passageway go?" And I'm like, "Well, that's for next week. So the party can take a short rest." And then they're like, "Well, maybe we should go out and get some reinforcements." I'm like, "Well, it's still, the party's still raging on upstairs. Like, anyone could stumble down here at any minute." And I'm like, "You did already see people come down here and not come up." They're like, "Yeah, you're right. Okay, we take our quick 5-minute rest, and then we're going to go follow the passage." So I guess next week they're going to end up at the temple. One of the things – I was talking to one of the other DMs, and he was saying his group did this encounter last week. And what he had done was he made a little prop. He bought like a little black book, like a phone book, an address book. And it just had lines in it, though. It didn't have, like, address and phone numbers and stuff. And he actually wrote names in it. Like, he just went to a random name generator, and he wrote in a whole bunch of names. But, like, on every other page, he put an actual name of somebody from the adventure that, the players can meet into the book. And so and then, like, you circle some names, you cross some names out. And, like, he said when he gave it to the his table, the players lost their mind. Like, they couldn't believe how good a prop this was, especially when they started to recognize some of the names. Like, it just, he said, it changed the whole dynamic of the table. And, you know, it's one of those little things. Like, yeah, it probably took him a little bit of time to put it together, but it just, it makes a session so good. And it's been a while since I've thought to do that, but it was like, oh yeah, you know, that's a great idea. So I think I may try and put something like that together for my group, so that next week when they start, I'm like, here's the ledger you found. And just to see if it can help push them in one direction or the other.
Nice.
Yeah, little props like that are really cool for the start of building the immersion, right?
Yeah, he said also when they did the week before they, or the week after they did the temple one that you were describing a minute ago, Craig. Mm-hmm. And apparently they find like a bloody note. So he said he had wrote this note with like a red marker and stuff. So yeah. Again, he had visual aids to hand them. He's like, you find this. And yeah, he said, like, you got a table where some of the people aren't paying attention and you hand them a player's aid, suddenly everybody's paying attention. And everybody keeps paying attention because they want to know what's coming next. I was like, you know what? That's a great reminder. It's been it's those little details that that can really make a huge difference.
Well, see, we come back also to like we were talking about when Craig ran this particular adventure where I think it was a TPK. You said
yes, it was. Yeah, absolutely.
Total TPK. So tactics were probably everything. Yeah. And on top of that, you had a leader, controller. And
it's controllers. And a part of it was, Mark, to your point, part of it was sort of a combination of good luck in where they were positioned when the combat started, and then smart tactics once the combat pursued. So, for example, they had the controller was the one who searched for the passage and opened the passage. So he was able to hit both monsters in the first round with a massive attack, which, again, made a huge difference.
Right.
And he's playing a drow. So on his at the end of his turn, at the beginning of the second round, he popped his Globe of Darkness. And so, yeah, the Bullywugs were still on the other side. I think one of them had stepped in a little bit and was threatening one of the squares. But with the Globe of Darkness, now the characters could move freely around them without taking opportunity attacks, which, again, put them into a better position to take down some of the other monsters. It allowed one of the guys to move out of the way from the crossbow guy so that he would not be able to get hit. It was, again, smart moves, smart tactics, and paying attention. Like, as soon as the guys got bloody, the wizard switched to magic missile because they're like, you know what? The guy's getting low now. Just something that'll hit and do damage is going to be better than a potentially 10 more points than I need. So, yeah, no, it was – and we had a lot of new players. I've got 3 of my 6 are new players. And, yeah, they're really getting it. Like, they look at the map tactically, and it's a combination of luck and skill.
Yeah, unfortunate for my players. They didn't fare off that much better. It was a fun encounter, but...
Which one did you do?
I did the Wrath of the Reptile God, same one that Craig did last week. So I kind of started the same area. I didn't want them to get killed. I mean, I think they have enough trouble. They'll have enough times getting killed in this adventure to start off with. I didn't want to basically do another, you know, double TPK.
Did you TPK them last week?
I did at the Moat House.
Ah, yes. Oh,
right. Okay.
So we went to the Moat House secondly, and they got blown apart. Just bad timing. They didn't go first in a niche. They didn't have enough time to prepare themselves, and they didn't play smartly. They didn't do their stealth checks to get in.
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, yeah, they didn't recognize the archers, et cetera. So this week we started just kind of like Craig started last week for when he ran. When his party got TPK'd in week 2. And essentially, they were on the raft. I still don't know how you're going to fit a whole party of people on a raft with a guy. But
Greg used a tile from one of the sets that was a 2x4.
Yeah,
so
I
stairs on it.
Yeah, I got a little bit of a bigger one just in case we had a full group plus a dude to ride the boat. But it's funny, on the actual map and the printed thing, they only do a 4-piece tile, but the description is
two by three.
Yeah.
So anyway, so the whole party member is I didn't read that until after, but anyway, they're all crowded on, piled on top of each other like a bunch of dead bodies and such. And the first guy to wake up was the sword mage. I asked him to roll Nish. So our sword mage was a Warforged sword mage. And he said, well, okay, I'm tied up. Sure, look around, see a guy with a cult. He's pushing the raft to the pole. And that elicited a few laughs from the table. Pushing the pole. Essentially he said, okay, well, I'm not even going to try and break these strands. He says, I'm going to call my sword and I'm going to cut my bonds. And I'm like, oh, you can do that? He said, yeah, I'm a sword mage. I have, like, call weapon or something like that. I'm not sure what it is, but yeah, he had it. So he called it, and I said, okay, well, I'll give the ropes a reflex DC of 12. So he made it, got up, took his attack against the guy. Didn't take his attack against the guy because he had to cut the bonds. Then he had to stand up, and then basically he was just waiting. So then the guy got to go, knocked him back out. Big surprise. Then the shard mine gets to go, so we have a shard mine warlock binder. He decided that he was going to use his shard mine racial power, teleport away, and instead of teleporting straight up or teleporting, into a more advantageous position, so he's going to teleport 10 feet up into the air. Teleporting 10 feet up in the air, he knew he would take some damage, but he thought he could take out the raft guy. So
he teleported above the guy so that he would fall on him? Is that was his plan?
No. He teleported about 10 feet to the left of the raft, or let's just say north of the raft, and about 10 feet up towards the ceiling.
Okay.
So, like, 10 feet diagonally up. It was kind of a... I questioned him on that move also, and I said, are you sure you want to do that?
Yeah.
He said, yeah, I want to do that. So, like, not 5 feet. It has to be 10 feet. And I just found that a little bit odd, but I said, okay, continue with your move. Yeah.
Rule of cool. If he thinks it's going to be cool, let him do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. So I said, okay, go ahead. So he teleports 10 feet diagonally up. And essentially what he's doing, he's 10 feet up towards the ceiling and he's above the water, which to me, once again, is odd. So he said, well, can I take a shot at the guy also before I drop into the water? I said, yeah, by all means, take a shot.
Yeah. Rule of cool. Let him try.
Take a shot. Missed, then hit the water. But essentially, he had just become conscious, so he had one hit point. So I said, okay, well, here's your damage for falling into the water. Knocked unconscious, starts sinking like a rock, because he is essentially a rock. He's a mineral, a human mineral, or a humanoid mineral. And so he starts sinking, and then the dwarf gets up, opens his eyes, looks at the cultist, and says, I pretend to stay dead. I'm like, okay. So I delay, he says. Next guy, what do you do? The rogue escaped, and he just stood there himself, so didn't want to do anything. Oh, sorry, no, the dwarf woke up, saw that the sword mage was back down, did a lay on hands on the sword mage, so he can be up before the rafting guy, before the cultist, so he can be up before then again. So... round two starts, so this is all round one. Round two starts, the paladin gets up, or the sword mage, I keep thinking of him as a paladin. He gets up, kills the guy. Shard mine, they have no idea where he is. All they heard was a big splash. So they kind of delayed that and let that go. What does the shard mine do? Rolls a natural 20. Becomes conscious, spends a healing surge, swims back to the top. Unbelievable, the luck that he had.
Better lucky than good sometimes.
Definitely. And, that was kind of the weirdest part of it to start off with. So then they decided, once again, as it seems to be that there seems to be a theme going on here, they did the exact same thing as your characters, Craig. They played dead, but the changeling rogue actually disguised himself as the rafter with the robes and all that stuff. So he comes up and they see the light, they see the torchlight off in the distance. So, they row all the way to the thing. And all of a sudden, the reptile god speaks up and says, what are you doing? What do you have on your raft? And essentially bluffed the reptile queen or reptile god and said, here's some more minions for your ritual. He says, you can never have too many spirits binding to you. He says, well, bring them forth to me. Warforged decided to go under the raft while they were doing this and basically walked the rest of the way underwater and automatically started the combat by charging the Naga. Now, he's stepping over a bunch of prone people because in the description they said that they had a whole bunch of innocent people, right? Just kind of hanging around the Naga, and that's what made the fun of it, the difficulty of it.
Great.
Charges in, steps over a couple of the people, and misses. Then the other ones decide to start acting. One decided to do a burst effect, killed like four of the citizens right away. And all of a sudden you heard a yell.
These are the player characters were attacking the minions?
The player characters were attacking the citizens. They weren't attacking the citizens, but they found that the Naga looked like it was really hard to hit.
Oh, so they didn't mind a little collateral damage? Is really
no,
awesome.
Not at all. But all of a sudden you see the little why. Some lady shouts out from the middle of this group and says, "Don't harm them, they're innocent." And they were like, "Oops, sorry." So then the sword mage goes in. Let me backtrack here. The sword mage was already in hand-to-hand combat with the reptile god. Now, your frog-faced dude, you know the one from the previous combat, Craig?
Yeah, Gareth.
Gareth essentially took the surprise round and attacked the characters himself, as was suggested. So I decided to go ahead with that. They pinned him down and killed him in one round. So he's no longer going to be around. But what ended up happening is the sword mage decided to cast a daily while Gareth was still alive, right? Mm-hmm. But missed him. So it's a sword mage power called, Whirling Blade. It's a daily. So what it is, if you miss the first target, you have to attack a second target within 5 squares.
Right.
So he goes and attacks Gareth, but then after that he had no other targets, and he missed both. So I rolled randomly out of the 8 minions remaining, plus the lady. I rolled the lady. Yeah.
We call that insult to injury.
Yeah, and she's not in very good condition either, so.
To start off with. So, yeah, long and short, they end up killing an important character. And he's like, "Well, can I take that power back?" Sorry.
Yes,
I said, "No, you're going to have to, the town's going to treat you differently now."
No kidding.
Long and short. I decided in this encounter also, because we were only 4, I decided not to bring the Wraith in.
Mm-hmm.
They were just having enough trouble with the reptile god and Gareth. I mean, Gareth put out a lot of damage before he went down. So what they ended up doing is they ended up killing they almost ended up killing the reptile god. The reptile god was at about half hit points, and 2 party members were dead. One was left at 2 hit points, and the other 3 hit points, and the other one was left at 7. At this point, the shard mine, who had died a few rounds ago, this lasted about 8 to 10 rounds, decided, "Can I bring in a cleric? Can I bring in a leader? Can I bring, you know, can I just see how this pans out if we just actually had a leader in the group?" I said, "You know what? What the heck?" All of a sudden, riding in that 2x2 raft, you see this leader that's basically got a motorboat engine on the back of the raft, right? Jumps in, goes to Anish, heals up Paladin, heals up the sword mage, and then they just basically dispatched of the reptile god. It was pretty fun. I mean, the last bit was just more or less for fluff, and what we're going to do is we're going to do the skill challenge the week after, but I'm kind of doing it in reverse order. I'm going to actually bring them into the Temple of the Lawbringer directly.
Yeah, that could work.
Yep.
Yeah, why not? I mean, that's one of the things I'm really enjoying about the, and we say this every week, but that's one of the things I'm really enjoying about this season is the encounters are created in such a way that you can easily rearrange the order and, based on what the players do or based on what they have happened to them, you can pretty much go anywhere that makes sense.
Yeah, and it gives you enough freedom to like add your own like little flair to certain areas and role playing bits that sort of like make. Although, you know, for example, like our what's it called, the tavern, bits. I mean, I played as a player in the Golden Grain encounter, and that played completely differently than when I ran it. And then it sounds like when you ran it tonight, Derek, it was a completely different kind of experience with just a couple of constants in that, like the combat with the Bullywugs and whatnot.
Yeah. So yeah, Craig, you played that one tonight, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we already summarized it a couple of times, but sort of real quick, how did it go for you?
Yeah, just briefly. I mean, initially my thought was like, oh man, we're going to get creamed tonight because I ran this and oh, it was just a mess. But, and I mean, this is also coming off of the past 2 weeks for this group that I'm playing in. We've just had our asses handed to us for the past two sessions. So I was like, oh, this is going to be just a joke tonight. But no, we totally cleaned up. I mean, we played the bar games. We did the darts, the drinking. I think we had one person at least for each of the events, and you know, we just aced all of them, so we pretty much obliterated the minions in that encounter just by, you know, being so successful with those bar games to begin with. So when it came down to it, I mean, my dice, you know, for the past couple weeks have been super cold, but tonight they were on fire. They're making up for lost time. I didn't
cool them down before you run the session on Monday.
Seriously, yeah, no. Well, actually, it's also worth noting I did not use my usual DM dice, which are usually hot when I DM and then cold when I play. So I used a different set of dice, and it was nice. So, but I mean, I hit every attack, and I was rolling some pretty high damage. So we very quickly dispatched the Bullywugs. We, you know, the Derek NPC and what's his name? The bartender dude. What's his name? I can't remember.
Bertram.
Yeah, Bertram. Yeah, we took this guy. Bertram especially. Like, he went running for the hills after a couple of rounds. So it was just a cakewalk. We just completely obliterated it. So, yeah it went well overall. Yeah, I think also, to keep in mind, we were level two. So, you know, I mean, you know, the plus one to your... to hit, and you know, you're slightly added defense and everything kind of made a difference too. So,
well, my party was probably at a disadvantage also. They were still level one. I didn't want to let them level up, like, what, they're going to get an extended rest while they're prisoners,
right?
That kind of stuff. So they were still level one. So I guess all in all, they did all right, but it was a very tough encounter. And once again, as they didn't play it exactly, you know, as you can tell with the shard mine falling into the water right away. I mean, to me, that was, as you would say, Derek, a rookie move.
This is one of the things I always tell people is, you know, if a guy plays a character differently than you play the character, it doesn't mean he's doing it wrong.
No.
And you certainly shouldn't chastise him for it. But
right.
I think the point, Mark, that you made earlier was, you know, sometimes players say and do crazy things with no reason. They just do it because they want to do something kooky. And it's like, sometimes you have to remind them, like, your character has a 20 intelligence. Do you really think he would put himself in this situation that if it doesn't work is going to just devastate him? And, you know, I mean, it all depends on the kind of players you have. But I find a lot, because I play so much and I see a lot of character builds, I'm constantly biting my tongue when someone does something with a character class that I know and I love and they do something. You're like, oh, like, that's the worst thing to do. What are you doing? But, I mean, if they think it's going to be cool, I always let them try. And then it's just like, you almost want to say after, especially if it doesn't work. It's like, okay, well, do you think you're going to do that again? No, probably not. I let the party police themselves. One guy does something dumb, and the rest of the party's like, dude, if you hadn't done that stupid thing, the rest of us wouldn't have taken all that damage. It's like, right. That's usually the lesson learned, is the rest of the party sort of polices themselves.
Yeah. It's we didn't have a controller again, and I think that would have done well. But if we had a slightly more evil party, then all those minions would have died, and it would have cleared a spot for everybody to get around the Naga.
Right. And I think for the game that I played in tonight with the Golden Grain, just not having those minions present certainly helped quite a bit, because that map is really small, so it's not like we didn't have that much less space to work in, right? We were a lot more maneuverable and able to sort of command the battlefield.
Yeah, found that with the Golden Grain Inn, with the downstairs, the small map, because there's so much difficult terrain, it can really, I mean, when we played it at Craig's table there, we got crushed. That was a big problem for us. We couldn't shift. So once you were trapped, it was like, uh-oh. You either had to take the opportunity attack or do something that maybe wasn't your best move, simply because it's like, I got nowhere to go. And tonight I found that was a big deal with the monsters. The players did a good job of keeping them in the areas where there was a lot of difficult terrain. So even though two of the big NPCs got flanking bonuses, they never once got a chance to take advantage of them because they couldn't get into position because of the difficult terrain.
Yeah. And I mean, the good thing with those NPCs from a DM's perspective anyway, is that they can shut down a lot of the tactical options just by being there and being in the way and cutting off your sort of like the limited range you already had, right? And providing flanking bonuses and that type of thing. So
yeah.
Cool. Controllers are great for this season.
So where does everybody think they're going next week? So I think with my group, they're found the secret passageway. They are going to the temple. What about you, Craig? What do you think?
Well, I know going into this, they had a little bit of interest in the Caves of Chaos, so I thought that's where we would probably go. But then there was a little more interest in where did Gareth go and all that kind of thing. However, the only thing is with Gareth, because I have, well, you're a player in the group, but yeah. Sure, you're good at separating player knowledge from what's it called, character knowledge. But I mean, they don't know. They know the name Laerith the Beautiful now. They don't know the Moat House. They don't know that connection yet. So I suspect it'll probably go to the Caves of Chaos, but it could, if they really want to press about Gareth's escape, they might be able to get some information to go Moat House.
Well, one thing you could do is, I don't think that party has really had a chance to visit and meet with a lot of NPCs. You could say that one of the guys from Otis's adventuring party stumbled back into town and like...
Right.
Explains like, oh my god, our party got overrun, and you know, just sort of plant that seed. And I think that would be all you'd need to do to get the party to go, okay, Caves of Chaos.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what this weekend I plan on looking over, just to see what I can plant in, because we ended at the end of the Lawbringer, and really, I mean, we need to get into the city, or they need to get back into the town and talk again, right? So now that they feel a little more safe, so we'll see where it brings us.
And then what about your other table? You're the player.
You know what? That's also sort of a question mark on that one. Because what, we just ended the Moat House line, and now we did the Golden Grain. I think it'll probably end up going into the Temple of the Lawbringer, because after we finished, we did quickly investigate the tunnels, and we got, you know, to the end where there's the iron doors and whatnot, and I know that leads to the temple, but we just kind of left it there, and I'm pretty sure we're going to the temple next week.
Same here. We're I'm gonna be doing that skill challenge. I'm gonna modify it a little bit, so I'll tell you guys how I do with that, and we're gonna end up at the Temple of the Lawbringer. And not that I want to railroad them, but I think it's kind of a good way to. I find that I haven't spent enough time in town at all, and just to go from one place to another just. Is rough, so we'll go through the Temple of the Lawbringer, and then I'll kind of do backwards what you did forwards this week, Craig.
Yeah, sounds cool. Good. So I don't know what you guys think. Is there anything that just for the sessions that you ran tonight, any advice that you would give to anyone running those encounters coming up?
No, I mean, I think we're getting to the point now with these podcasts is that we've all sort of done every encounter. It sounds like we've done every encounter now. So right. I think that we're helping each other. Like, you know, I know when I ran Caves of Chaos last week, I used the feedback that Mark provided the week before. And I know when I ran the Golden Grain Inn part one tonight, I used some of what Craig had provided when he ran it against us a couple of weeks earlier as well. So, I can't think of anything that I would have done differently that we haven't already talked about with the session that I only had the one session this week, but with that one, I think it went really well.
Right. What about you, Mark?
I've been using a lot of the advice that both of you once again have given me. So like this week, the Naga one, I used a little bit of, you know, okay, well they just end up there, which is kind of great. Cause I wouldn't have thought of that to start off with. And with the Moat House, I used yours, Derek. I guess the only critique I have is you're absolutely right, Craig, is the spacing for a god to be kicking around is like small.
Yeah, exactly.
But no, that's there's not even a critique. It was a heck of a lot of fun, but no, I have no criticism whatsoever.
Indeed. Now for me, I haven't actually run a game yet that I've gotten advice on from any of you guys. So everything I've run so far hasn't been talked about yet. So for me, for saying running the temple thing, I guess actually I thought it was a pretty fun encounter. I kind of thought it would be a little more on the boring side, just the way it read, but I ended up having a lot of fun with it. I guess the only thing is that when you're actually in the temple before, you know, getting into combat in the basement, there's not a whole lot to really actually do in the church, or sorry, in the temple, I should say. Like, they give you a couple of sort of, what's it called, the knowledge cues and whatnot that she drops down for them. Like, oh, you know, they're in the temple, or they're in the basement with the monks, and don't disturb them, and that kind of thing. And then you find Sir Moonbrook. But there's not a whole lot more, and if you just kind of ran it strictly with what you had there, you would have a pretty short, unsatisfying role-playing encounter. But at the same time, the sort of... And I shouldn't say that this is not necessarily a critique of the season, because I think this whole season has been like really well written. It's more just like you're left to your own sort of devices to fill in the blanks on that spot. So that's why I kind of threw in the figs, and that's why we had the collection plate and we had those brochures for them to sort of have fun with and, you know, just fool around with the stuff and giving the Sister Euphemia a little bit of a personality that they can interact with. But yeah, beyond that. It's a good one.
Good. Okay, I guess that's it then. We'll recap next week and go from there.
Sounds good. Excellent. Well, thank you everybody for being on tonight.
Well, thank you for having me.
And we'll see you all next week.
Wonderful.
This concludes Session 4 of D&D Encounters Season 12 Against the Cult of Chaos. Join us next week for Week 5.
You can follow me on Twitter at @Amaron_DM, and be sure to visit DungeonsMaster.com for original D&D 4th edition material, including a weekly field report of my D&D Encounters experiences.
And follow me on Twitter at 20Foot, and visit 20FootRadius.blogspot.com for your weekly dose of D&D Encounters. That's 20FootRadius20FTRadius.blogspot.com. Until then, have a blast.